had Moshe actually spoken to the rock. And then what would the, what does that mean for the future generation? Something quite incredible. They would have maintained that emuna forever, for generation after generation, generation. And therefore, what would have happened? And then, so therefore, Moshe and Aaron would have entered into Eretz Yisrael, right? Because they wouldn't have been punished that they couldn't enter. Moshe would have built the Beis HaMikdash. The Ein Chshash, Lahashlochas Chamosay al Yisrael, Kishayiyu Chaitim, Ka'amor B'divreihem, B'posuk Mizmer La'asuf. Interesting thing. We know from other places that one of the reasons that Moshe didn't go into Eretz Yisrael was actually a protection for the Jewish people. Because had Moshe entered Eretz Yisrael, he would have been the one to build the Beis HaMikdash, we always say. What would have happened if whatever Moshe builds is eternal, whatever he touches with his hands cannot be destroyed? Then when the Jewish people, usually we explain, then when the Jewish people wouldn't have done what was so right in the eyes of Hashem, who would Hashem have had to let his anger out on? The people. Instead, what did he do? He let his anger on to the stones of the Beis HaMikdash. But had Moshe built the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem wouldn't be able to do that, so to speak, because the Beis HaMikdash would be so permanent that Hashem would have had to let his anger out on the people rather than on the stones. That's one of the reasons that the Aruch Haim actually explains, this is spoken at length in Chumash Devarim, that Moshe didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. Fascinating. All for the protection of the Jewish people. And what kind of people are we talking about? People who are not so deserving. Ay, 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 right? That's why he can't go in. And yet, he stands aside. But over here, the Aruch Haim says, had the people been on a higher level here, and had Moshe spoken to the rock and instilled this emuna, what would have happened is he would have, yes, been able to go into the land. Why? Because there wouldn't even be a possibility that they would ever lose their faith. So Hashem would never get angry at them. So he would never have to release his anger on the stones. He wouldn't have any, there would be no anger. And that would have been what we would know as the time of Mashiach. That's what it would have been then. But obviously, that's not what was meant to be. We understand that we needed, for whatever reason, we ask many times why, but we needed. And we know the Aruch Haim in many places explain, and different great tzaddikim explain that throughout our long galus, wherever we find ourselves, we're there for a purpose. And the purpose is to elevate, as we always say, the sparks of holiness, whatever we encounter, wherever we are. So there is a purpose to our time, but we're finished already. It's enough. Now we need Mashiach to come immediately. But to come back here, sure, Sylvia, sure.
You say that Hashem could take it out on the rocks.
Yes, that's what he did.
But he did take it out on the rocks.
Okay, so it's a very good question. So he did, but limited. Believe it or not, it's still limited. We're still here. I know, but we're still here, Sylvia. That's, you're right, but we're still here. I know, we question. We have a lot of questions. We say Hashem is going to have a lot of questions. Okay, and Mashiach will answer a lot. Okay, but just to come back over here, we say, V'kevan sheba tikun ha-davra al-yudeim v'lo yasohu. But, unfortunately or fortunately, whatever, no, nothing. It was bashert. Moshe and Aaron did it the way they did it, and they didn't speak to the rock, and they hit the rock. Therefore, nechlat hadavar, so it was absolutely decided. They're not going into the land. They're not building the Beis HaMikdash. But, just something very beautiful he says. V'amar Hashem lochein, and therefore Hashem said, so Hashem said lochein, therefore peirush, bishvil zed, because of this. Gam loshen shvua, it's also almost like a promise that Hashem says, impossible, now you can't. Shelo yavi'u, they will not bring this generation into Eretz Yisrael. Because Hashem saw how history will unfold and the people will not keep on the straight and narrow. And they won't always have the highest level of emuna, and therefore they will have to go into galus. Moshe Rabbeinu himself tells the people, right, in Chumash Devarim, that we were just reading those parshiyos. I know that I will absolutely have to destroy, right, and that you will go into galus. So as we said, had Moshe entered on that level, that's not such a positive thing, then Hashem would have had to let his anger out on the people. So therefore, going to the next page, You see, v'diktek leimar, es ha'am hazeh, amru b'medrash, and we see something very beautiful. And in this whole story, there's veiled a very beautiful part. He says, which nation are you not bringing into Eretz Yisrael? We say, ha'am hazeh, this nation, this generation, these people, when? Now. But, he says, as he says, hazeh einchem mevi'im, aval atem machnisim es kol Yisrael la'asid lavai. But in the future, there will be a time, and it's coming very, very soon, where Moshe and Aaron together with Mashiach will bring the entire Jewish people back into Eretz Yisrael. And specifically, Moshe will be there with his generation, the generation that he led, that he was so devoted to. He will take them into Eretz Yisrael. And he says, right? It's a beautiful prophecy said by Hosea about the time of Mashiach, that he will again, so to speak, re-bring them, but they were about to enter now, but this generation didn't enter. Now the new generation is going to enter, but now he's going to reawaken them, and they will come in just like in the days of their youth, so to speak, just like when they left Mitzrayim. And we say, Zeh Moshe v'Aaron, umaychiches hadvarim nishma, oh, and he says, umitoychiches hadvarim nishma, and from the content, from the context of what we're talking, shem im hayu mekachim shem shemayim leineyem, had they caused this Kiddush Hashem, this generation would have been like the generation of the time of Mashiach. We know that Hashem will take away all the impurity from the world, and therefore nobody will ever make any mistakes again. We will be absolutely certain, constantly clear clarity in serving Hashem. The world will be filled with the honor of Hashem. So unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. We don't understand. You know, it's interesting because everything is so, as we say, such as Bacha Pratis, because now we're in the month of Elul. I know we mentioned, but just very quickly, we say that when the Jews, unfortunately, when we did the Chet HaEgel, when we sinned at the golden calf, we say there's, on a certain level, there's a concept of, how do you say, it was almost like a setup, you know? Sometimes you set somebody up. Hashem set us up in almost for failure. For why? So that we should have the concept of tshuva. And that is why this time of year is when Moshe Rabbeinu, this month, Elul, was Moshe Rabbeinu was up on the mountain, actually getting forgiveness for the Jewish people. And this is something that we live with. The possibility of making a mistake, but the greater possibility of not just rectifying, but actually growing so much from our mistakes and coming even closer to the Eibishter. So in a certain way, this also, this concept with Moshe and Aaron. So just two other small things before we move on. So one beautiful thing, remember we mentioned last week, so I saw a beautiful idea. We mentioned the Ramban. The Ramban had a very nice, interesting insight based on Rabbeinu Hananel. And he said that the mistake, so to speak, that Moshe and Aaron made was really a very slight one. It wasn't a mistake, but it was just the words that they used. And they said, when they talked about the water coming out of the rock, they said, "V'noitzi lachem mayim min hasela." We will extract water from the rock, which could be misunderstood that Moshe and Aaron have something to do with the water coming out of the rock. But really, who was it all coming from? Hashem himself. Obviously, Moshe knew that. Everything from Moshe was an extension from Hashem. He was the most devoted servant. The problem was the perception of the people. Moshe being a leader, as we know with ourselves, even sometimes we have to be so careful when we say something or when we do something, because you don't know how another person will see it. So even when we have the best intention, and we don't mean anything negative, but if somebody else sees it and takes the wrong thing out of it, that could be a problem. And that's what Hashem was worried about here with Moshe and Aaron, that the people, some of the people are not on such a high level as Moshe, and they don't have the same faith that Moshe has, and they don't have the same understanding that Moshe has about how Hashem for sure runs every single aspect of the world. So I heard such a beautiful story. Somebody shared, this is a story that happened with the Lubavitcher Rebbe many, many years ago, but it's just a beautiful story of this idea of how we have to be so careful of how other people can perceive, and therefore, sometimes we have to change or do things in a different way. So the story goes like this, apparently. It's funny, I do remember there was, I don't know, he wasn't a boy, he was a man. who actually came to Crown Heights, to New York from Israel. He was Israeli, and he was born, I think he was even born with a certain condition, and it became worse as he got older. But his condition was that he had a very, very deformed face, as well as afterwards he actually became also blind. And it was very, very difficult to look at him because he was so, unfortunately, very, very deformed. But he was hanging around there in New York, and he used to come to 770, but he couldn't actually see. So you would think that this is a very important part of the story, because he heard very well, and obviously he was aware of a lot of things, but nevertheless he couldn't see. The story goes like this, that the Rebbe used to daven most of the time, the big shul, people know the big 770, but in the evenings there was a little shul near his room, sort of a little room that they would daven Mincha Ma'ariv, and used to be the, always, that's what people said when they observed, always when the Rebbe would daven, he would like put his hand on his face, you know, I guess to concentrate, almost covering his, like looking down, and his hand was on his face, concentrating on his siddur, concentrating on his davening. All of a sudden, people started to notice that whenever this person was there, the Rebbe didn't put his hand on his face. And somebody started to notice it, and it was very unusual because he always did. But when he was around, the Rebbe didn't. And so people started obviously to have certain, you know, thoughts that perhaps the Rebbe was doing it not to be seen, that he doesn't want to look at him, right? But they didn't know for sure. And somebody actually wrote into the Rebbe and asked the Rebbe and said, I noticed that you've changed. Why is it that you put your hand down? And the Rebbe just used the words, L'shem Avas Yisrael. And it was such a powerful thing, that the sensitivity that it might be, even though he always did it, but just in case somebody might interpret that he's putting his hand on his face to avoid looking, even though that, why should you think that? But he didn't. So you see such an incredible thing from this, is one of the big lessons here, that Moshe, this is why we learn this story. We're not learning to see chesreinus in people, chas v'shalom. We're learning to see how we should. So obviously Moshe meant everything well, but everything we say and every single thing we do, we also have to have in mind how people will interpret, and if chas v'shalom we shouldn't hurt somebody, we have to go to the highest lengths to be extra, extra sensitive, extra careful. So it's a very powerful idea that we see. And as we know, there are so many lessons from this. One small other thing, as I said before we move on, this is a little bit of a deeper idea. It's a very interesting thing that it says like this, that the hitting of the rock, Kabbalistically, the rock symbolized in this context, actually the water symbolized Torah, water always symbolizes Torah, and the rock in this context is almost like the source of Torah. And it says like this, had Moshe Rabbeinu spoken to the rock, what would that symbolize? And water would have come out. That would be, like, so to speak, we would have the imagery of somebody learning Torah and accessing it very easily. Easily meaning, and we're not saying the Torah should be hard, but easily meaning that you don't really have to put any effort. Because speaking to a rock, water pouring out, that's 1 second, instant. It's like instant coffee, instant, everything instant. What Moshe Rabbeinu ended up doing was, he ended up hitting the rock. Hitting is a much harder thing to do. It's more effort involved. Which meant that for the Jewish people, up until today, yes, Torah is there. Torah is accessible for all of us. Truth is, nowadays it's very accessible. But we do have to put effort, right? If we stay in bed on Monday morning, we won't learn. It doesn't make a difference if the shiur is accessible or not. We have to make the effort. We have to put the effort in. And the truth is, we know it's a little bit more than just that. We have to use our head. We have to set aside the time. We have to concentrate. There's a lot of different things we have to do. Interestingly enough, in a certain sense, we might say, oh, wouldn't it have been nice had Moshe just spoken to the rock and we would have been able to access the Torah so easily. But the truth is, there's so much benefit to working hard for something. And in a way, this is what Moshe gifted us with. Moshe gifted us, even though he himself didn't have that, because for him, he was so one with the Torah, so one with Hashem. There was no challenges. And that's why he didn't actually lead them into once he hit the rock. Because he wasn't that type of leader. When he was around, all you wanted to do was be in his presence. You didn't want to stay in bed. But the Aveda, what's really meant to be? What's the journey? The journey is for us to work hard. When we work hard for something, we acquire it. It becomes ours. When it's given to us on a silver platter, not only isn't it so much ours, but we don't even appreciate it so much. You see that even with children. You give them something easily, they don't appreciate. You work for it, it's yours. And even sometimes when you work for something and it doesn't come out as good, you know, you go to the bakery, you buy the perfect looking thing, but when you make it, it is just something invested. You invest yourself. And this is really the purpose of Torah. Torah has to be our connection to Torah. So even if we don't reach the highest levels and we don't understand the highest things, but we are putting our investment in, that's much more worthwhile in a sense. And that's the Aveda that we have up until now. We are hoping, Mirtz Hashem, when Mashiach will come, we'll have both advantages. The effort that we've put in through all these years, but then we will be gifted with the rest. The rest will be given to us on a silver platter because we have put the effort in already. And therefore, we will be able to actually acquire and internalize even that which we will be given as a gift. But that's why it was a bit of an interesting thing. Hitting, speaking. Moshe naturally would have spoken, but Hashem wanted him really, really underneath all the layers to hit the rock so he shouldn't go in and to Eretz Yisrael, and we would have to work hard for our connection, and that's what we have to continuously do. But we should know it's worth it. It's definitely worth it, and that's why we continue to try. And that's also, again, Hashgacha Pratis, very much the month of Elul. The month of Elul is all about our work. Ani l'daydi. We have to do our effort, of course, with Hashem's help. We always say, Hashem's 13 midas harachamim, it's all there. Hashem is helping us. He's with us. But we still have to make the first move. That's so important for us. Okay, so we're going to move on now to the next, let's see, I can scroll down. If you go to the next page, yeah, we're going to see some psukim. Now this is the next topic in the parasha. So the next topic, as we say, and now Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, just keep in context, it all goes, actually it's all flowing in order because we are now the 40th year of the Yidden in the desert. They are supposed to be entering Eretz Yisrael soon, right? That's the idea. So they're traveling very close to the border. All the people from the previous year, from that generation, have passed away already, except for Moshe and Aaron, and even Miriam has already passed away right at the beginning of our parsha. We are almost getting to Aaron's passing, but just before we get to Aaron's passing, which we'll do next week in Ritz Hashem, there's a few psukim here of an interesting small part, which seems technical, but again, everything has so many beautiful lessons. So let's see. Now they're at the border of the country called Edom. Do you remember who Edom is? Who's Edom? Do you remember?
Yeah,
almost, yes. It is. It's Esav, 100%. Edom is the nation that comes from Esav. Okay, that's formidable enemies, for sure. So they have a very nice portion of land right outside of Eretz Yisrael. For the Jewish people, from the position that they are in now, to enter the land, the most direct route, as we say now, you know, we can travel over Saudi Arabia and over Dubai, whatever it may be, and get to Eretz Yisrael quicker. We want a little quicker even, but still, it's amazing. So we understand. They want to go. What's going to happen? Are they going to be given permission or not? Let's see what the pasuk tells us. We think everything, as in chadash tachas Hashem is, right? Nothing new under the sun. Everything we experience now, they experience then. So let's see. Vayishlach Moshe Malachim. So Moshe Rabbeinu sent messengers Mikadesh, from Kadesh, that's where they were camped at that time, El Melech Edom, to the king of Edom. And what does he say? He has a whole long speech. Sounds like a very nice diplomatic speech. What does he say? And every word is really exactly. It's amazing. Kai Amar, Kai Amar Achicha Yisrael. So says your brother Israel. Okay, interesting. His brother, right? It's on page 242. Do you see there? Ata yadaita. You are aware. Es kol hatla'a asher mitzasanu. Of all the hardships that has befallen us. This is what he's saying to the descendants of Esav, because he wants to travel through their land. And what's the troubles? V'yerdu aviseinu mitzrayim, our forefathers descended to Egypt. V'neishev b'mitzrayim yomim rabim, and we had to live in Egypt many years. V'yirou lanu mitzrayim v'la'aviseinu, and the Egyptians did evil to us and to our forefathers. Every word is exact. Well, see, it sounds so over, like, why such a description? Just ask what you need, what you want. But we'll see soon how everything Moshe Rabbeinu is saying is really a response to what he anticipates they will ask. So he's already responding to their questions. But let's see, we'll just do two more psukim to see what happens. And then he goes on, and what did the Egyptians do? And they made it so difficult for us. V'nitzak el Hashem, what did we do? We cried to Hashem. V'yishma koleinu, and Hashem heard our voice. That's also very specific. V'yishlach malach, and what did Hashem do? He sent a malach. V'yotzieinu mimitzrayim. It's an interesting word that he sent a malach. Who is the malach that Hashem sent to take them out of Egypt? So interesting. Could be. Who could it be? Okay, interesting. So very good, Sheila. So according to some Mefarshim, well, we know there was a concept of a malach being around, right? But then we say, lo yayadei malach, right? Hashem didn't take us out. So according to some Mefarshim, it means Moshe himself. And a fascinating thing. We know Moshe was a person, a human being like all of us, but he was on the level of a malach. Because it's interesting how this follows right after the hitting of the rock. You see, also to make sure that we understand whatever Moshe did, we don't understand it the way we do things. It's not, he's on a whole different level. But the malach over here, Moshe was so dedicated both to Hashem and to the Jewish people to the point that he had almost no life of his own. That's the kind of malach he was. And what happened? V'yotzieinu mimitzrayim, he took us out of Egypt. And as we go on to the next page, now, and that's the end of that part of the speech, and then getting to the point, v'hine anachnu b'kadesh, now we are in Kadesh, ir k'tzei gvulecha, a city at the edge, so to speak, of your border. And what do we want? Nabra nabar tzecha, let us pass through your land, like, please let us pass through your land. Loi navar, and now we give also very clear how we're going to do it. Loi navar b'sodeh u'b'kerem, we will not pass through fields or through vineyards. V'loi nishte mei be'er, we will not drink the water of the well. What well are we talking about? Interesting, mei be'er. Let's see what he means by that. And then he says a very interesting language. Derech hamelech nelech, we shall travel the king's road. What does the king's road mean? Such a funny language. According to some commentaries, it means the paved road. Okay, because that would have been the way the king would have traveled, the paved road. Okay, loy nita yaminu smo, we will not veer, not right or left. Ad asher navar gvulecha, until we pass through your border. Vayomer eilav Edom, so how does Edom respond? As we know, loy savar bi, do not, at first he says, you shall not pass through me, but that's not enough. He doesn't just leave it there. No, I don't give you permission. Of course, he has to come further. Pen b'cherev etzei l'krasecha, lest I go out forth against you with the sword. Don't get any ideas in your head. Why do you start with brothers? Well, let's not forget all the past history. Brothers aher, brothers ahin. I have my sword, and I'm not putting it down. Do not come near my land. Moshe actually still tries. Vayayimru Eilav, and Moshe Rabbeinu continues, and he says to him, B'nei Yisrael b'mesilo nale, we will go on the highway, like in a straight path. We will, so to speak, walk in a straight line. Ani, he says, v'im eimecha nishte, and if we will drink your water, ani umiknai, me or my cattle, v'nasati michram, and I will pay their price. It's not just, I will give you compensation, I will pay whatever price you ask for it. We will pay. In other words, financially, this will be amazing for you. Rak ein davar. Just, there's nothing at all, and we'll explain what that means. Rather, biraglai evaira. Let me pass through on foot. Okay, what do they say? Vayayimer, loy savar. Do not, you cannot pass. Vayetze edaim lekrosai. It's not enough, the words. Diplomatic. All beautiful. Moshe's asking in such a nice way. What's the response? Edom goes out against him with am kaved, with a vast multitude, ubiyat chazaka, and with a strong hand, threatening. Don't you even dream of it. And what happens? Vayimain Edom, and so Edom refused nesaynes Yisrael avar b'gvulay, to let the Jewish people pass through their borders. Vayet Yisrael may olav. How do we respond? We turn away from near him, we have to go a different way, which means it's going to take a little bit longer. So, one important thing before we go further, something very important to keep in mind. This story happens right after Moshe Rabbeinu was told what? That he's not going into the land. If you see right at the beginning, who's sending the messengers? It says Moshe is sending the messengers. Usually, Moshe obviously is sending the messengers on behalf of himself, but of course it's on behalf of the Jewish people. It's not for himself. He wants the Jewish people to be able to. Why does it highlight that Moshe is sending the messengers? There's a very beautiful idea. The Jewish people heard what just happened. They know Moshe is not going into the land. Therefore, if they would take this route, this very direct, quick route, what does that mean? Moshe will pass away sooner. So they are not in such a rush. They're not hurrying. They don't want the quickest route at the moment. And not only that, they don't want to be seen to be rushing. Even if they are, that doesn't look nice. Obviously, they love Moshe and it doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right to them. Therefore, they don't. But who does? And this is the most incredible thing. And I just have to read you one of the lines from the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh. He says it so, so beautifully. If I could find those words. Just absolutely beautiful words, which... Let's see if I... Oh, of course, I wrote it down, but I won't find where I wrote it. But he uses very, very beautiful language. He says, yeah. Moshe ha-machshiv to'eles Yisrael me'chaye atzmai miyad va'yishlach yishlach. Moshe thinks of the benefit, what's good for the Jewish people, more than his own life. He, that's why we called him a malach. He is a malach. He almost doesn't count. The Jewish people can have a more direct route, a quicker way, enter the land. Not only that, but think about the history. What's Moshe afraid a little bit? When they went a different route, and they tried to go through the south, that's when he sent the original Meraglim, 40 years before, what happened? They ended up staying in the desert for another 40 years. Moshe knows this is not an easy people, and it's not their fault. This is a people who are suffering, who are traveling with the, you know, with the children, the wives in the desert. The quicker we get there, the better. Who knows what could happen any moment? So let's get there. Let me get them into the land, even if it costs me my life. And this is such a powerful thing. But we see again, such an incredible leader, such a devoted shepherd, if you want to say it. That is Moshe Rabbeinu. This is Moshe. So even though also these people that he is taking now are technically not his flock anymore. They belong to Yahushua, right? Because he's transferring leadership to Yahushua. His flock is the one he's staying with, the ones that have already passed away. But that doesn't matter. Moshe cares about every yid. He's really the Raya Neman for all of us throughout all the generations. And that's why we say he will come up and he will come back into Eretz Yisrael with all of us, Emirat Hashem, very, very soon. So this is a very beautiful part. Just again, and this again, the lesson, obviously, if the Torah is telling us, look, we are not Moshe. We are not ever equating ourselves, but we can. We can be sensitive. We can also put ourselves aside for the sake of another. We have that ability as a Jew, and we have to aspire to something higher, even when sometimes it can cost us a tremendous amount. So it's just a very important lesson also. Let's see now, we're going to go back, I'm sorry, back to do some of the Rashis. I feel bad. Today I have a few mafarshim, we won't have time, but I just want to see the Rashis, because the Rashis are just very beautiful. So we're going to start on page, the Rashi begins on page 242. The first Rashi is on page 242 to explain this idea, like this whole long speech that he's giving to Edom. Very interesting thing. Now, just another thing to keep in mind, because you mentioned right away Edom, you know, being red, right? And we know, what did Yaakov say about Esav? What did he call it? He said, Al-char b'chot tichyeh. You will live... Oh, Amalek, excellent. Amalek, very good. Very, 100%. These are all their cousins. This is the whole family. A very nice family. So you can see. So this is exactly Rona. But here we have Edom himself, which is the, you know, Mamish, the grandson, and this is the nation that he established. But we have a fascinating thing. But nevertheless, Edom is still a cousin, a first cousin. I mean, that's what they are, right? They're our relatives. We are not talking about foreign nations that are not connected, that are, everybody's connected to them. You go way back, but it's not very far back, right? This is really a close relative. So Moshe has an interesting thought. Think about it. Who was promised Eretz Yisrael originally? Originally, who's the first one that we're suffering till today from? Who's the first one that was promised? Avram, right? Avram. At what? At Bris Bein Hapsarim, right? The covenant of the parts. And what did Hashem tell Avram then? That your descendants will inherit the land of Israel. But do you remember Abraham had to make a choice? The only way they can inherit is what? If he had a son, 100%, very good. Yeah, which he, Baruch Hashem, did. But there was another prerequisite. They had to experience something first. So Hashem gave Avram choice, either Gehenim or Golos. I don't know if you remember, exile. And Avram chose Golos. And that's why we had to go to Mitzrayim first, and only after that were we able to enter Eretz Yisrael. So there seems to be a price to pay for Eretz Yisrael. Very hefty price, as we know, but it's a big price. And this is, initially, it would have been just the Golos in Egypt had we been able to reach the highest level, but it ended up not being. But the point is, over here, at this point, they had paid their price, right? So what the price? The price is the Golos that they experienced. Now, not only are the Jewish people at this point, Moshe and the Jewish people, the descendants of Avraham, but Edom is also a descendant of Avraham. So they can also have a claim. Just like, as we know, the Yishmaelim have a big claim. They say, right? We're suffering big time from that. Oh, we're also. But we have an answer. So let's see what Moshe says to them. So, Achicha Yisrael. So first of all, Moshe Rabbeinu starts and says, yeah, I know we're your brother. I haven't forgotten. And you're also from the same family. Ma ra'o lahaskir kan achva. So Rashi asks, what did he see that led him to mention brotherhood here? Ella amarlai. But Moshe said to Edom, Achim anachnu, we are brothers. Bnei Avram, the children of Avram, shenemar lo, to whom it was said, ki ger yihye zaracha, that your offspring will be gerim, they will be sojourners, they will be in golus. Va'al shneinu haya oisei achayv lefarai. It was incumbent upon both of us to pay that debt. Technically, Esav as well as Yaakov's descendants should have. Yaakov went down to Egypt. Esav should have also gone down to Egypt. Thank God he didn't. But he should have, if he wanted Eretz Israel. What do we know? What did Esav do? Fascinating thing. Did Esav stay in Israel? It's very interesting. You know how Yaakov so wanted to be back in Israel and he got back? What did Esav do? Then if you remember, he traveled out. That's where he traveled. Here, Edom, out of Eretz Israel. He found himself a nice, very fertile land out of Eretz Israel. Why? Part of his logic was, if I leave the land of Israel, I will not have to go down to Egypt. I will not be part of that destiny that Hashem had promised Avram. Yaakov was in the land of Israel, and Hashem said, you have to descend down to Egypt. Had Esav been there with him, he might have also had to go down his descendants. So Esav didn't. So now Moshe is coming after, you know, these 40 years, whatever, it's 210 and 40 years, so it's 250 years later, and he's telling him, you guys have to remember, there's something missing that you have, something that we have that you don't have. We have paid the debt, and you haven't paid the debt. Let's see how he goes on. He says, Ata yadaita, you are aware of all the hardship. Es kol hatla, the hardship. Lefichach, this is why your father parted from our father. That he went to a land. In other words, he went out of the land of Israel. He went to a different land. Because of his brother Yaakov. Because of the promissory note, which was put upon them, that both of them were really obligated to pay. And he put it all on Yaakov. Now you have no claim to the lands anymore. And then Moshe continued, Vayeru lanu, and the Egyptians did evil to us. Savalnu tsareis rabbis, we suffered many travails. Now the Aruch Hayim HaKadosh points out something very beautiful. He says that everything is so exact here. And when Moshe Rabbeinu says, you are aware of all the hardship, Moshe is saying to them, you are aware more than other people. What does that mean? He says, other people could say, and people might say, oh, the fact that you landed up in Egypt, that was just chance. You know, like we say sometimes, my family travels from here to there to there to there. Why are we in Sydney? We always ask every day, who knows why Hashem made us live in Sydney? We don't know. It just happens to be. That was the way. Obviously, it's all Hashgacha Pratis. We do know that. But what could happen is other nations could say to the Jewish people, it was just your bad mazel that you ended up in Egypt. It has nothing to do with anything else. But Moshe says, to Edom, you know it has nothing to do with bad mazel. You know very well that this was something that was already prophesied to Avram Avinu. You know, because you're a grandson. You know, just like we know. And you know that your grandfather, or your father, so to speak, chose to leave Israel. So you can't pull anything on this. Other people might make mistakes. And say, oh. And then the idea that we suffered. Why does he go, how much we suffered? Because a very interesting thing. We suffered so much. What else might Esav say back to Yaakov? Or as we're saying in our context, Edom to Moshe. Okay, Avraham was told that your children will have to be slaves for how many years? Do you remember what he was told? 400 years. How many years were the Jews actually in Mitzrayim? Only 210. You didn't serve your full sentence. So you don't have to go into the land yet. Ah, so Moshe says he forewarns it. What does he say? He says, after Yedaites Kolakla, not only that, Vayareyulanu, they did evil to us. The suffering, and he says, Savalnu Tsoreis Rabbis, we suffered so much. The 210 years were more than 400 years worth of suffering. It was so harsh. We more than did our quota. We've paid our debt totally. And therefore, allow us just to come through and we will enter Eretz Yisrael and leave you in peace, so to speak, where you are. It's not even as if they're asking for anything. You understand? They're not asking them to move out of their land. They're not asking them to give the Jewish people anything. Not only that, but they say they're going to pay for everything. It'll be beneficial for you. Just let us temporarily pass through. And even that, they won't allow. It's quite incredible. It just gives us a real understanding, as we can say, of everything throughout all our history up until today. And it's all the Eibishter running the world in his way. That's how it is. I just want to see one more Rashi here. As we said, we suffered many travails. And to our forefathers, Mikansha Avais, and this is also one last thing, and well, a beautiful idea. He says something interesting because he mentions also that they made us suffer, Moshe Rabbeinu says, and who else? And our forefathers. What does that mean? What does it mean by our forefathers? Obviously, us means our people. So who are the forefathers? So it actually is referring to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Why? Yaakov was in Egypt, but he didn't suffer in Egypt, right? The suffering only began after he passed away, right? So what does this mean? It's a very strong Rashi says like this, Mikan, from here we see, Shaha Avais Mitztarim Bekever, that the patriarchs feel the pain in the grave, Kishepuranos Baal Yisrael, when punishment comes upon Israel. And this means for all of us, actually, this means Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but all of our forefathers, all throughout our fathers, our grandfathers, our great-grandfathers, they have pain when we are suffering. That's why we know what does the pain mean. So we don't just want Chas V'Shalom that it should just be a pain for nothing. Obviously, that means that they are beseeching on our behalf. All of our, Zaydis and Babis are beseeching on our behalf constantly. And when we are suffering, it hurts them as well. But the beautiful part is that means that when we are benefiting, when we are growing in Ruchnius, when we do a mitzvah, for sure they get pleasure. If they get pain, they also get pleasure. So every time that we do something, whether in their schus or without even thinking necessarily in their schus, definitely we give tremendous pleasure. And not only do we give them pleasure, but we believe that when we do good, what happens is, and this is a very important thing for us, especially in the month of Elul, they go up to the Eibishter and they say, look, they want to do good, help them to do better, help them along, take away all the things that are preventing them from continuing. So this is the strength that we have. We are not coming on our own. And this is also what Moshe is saying. We're not coming on our own. Don't forget who we are. We have very strong background. And this is our strength. Why do you want to mess with us? Okay, for whatever reason, we'll see next week a little bit more. Mirtz Hashem, maybe I'll do one more Rashi, and then we'll stop because we just finish over here. Vayishma Kaleinu, and he heard our voice. Bibracha Shebeirachnu Avinu. The bracha which our father was blessed, and what is that? Hakol Kol Yaakov. The voice is Yaakov's voice. Sha'anu Tzoyakin v'nenin. We cry out and we are answered. Moshe saying to Edom, listen guys, maybe you have a sword. It's true, you do. That's what they responded. You know, you have the voice, we have the sword. But don't forget, the voice that we have, that we cry out to Hashem, that's the blessing that we were given, and Hashem actually listens. That voice is just as powerful or much more powerful than the sword. And he brings a proof that it was already done. When we cried out in Mitzrayim, Hashem listened. When we cry out through our Golus, Hashem listens. So don't stand there so, you know, arrogantly with your sword. But Esav doesn't care. He still stands with his sword because he says, that's ours. You know, we have the sword. But nevertheless, Moshe tells them, remember what we have. And this is what he's using. And it's also, it's more than to Esav. Obviously, it's a message to all of us, to the Jewish people. Remember, we have such incredible gifts. The gift of the voice that Hashem has given us to communicate with the Eibishter, to communicate with each other. And when we do that throughout the month of Elul, there's no question, as we say, that we have a ksivach simateva, that we have a good gebench diar, and we have everything we need. And for sure, we'll be reunited with everybody throughout all the generations. And we're waiting to see Moshe Rabbeinu imagine, and Miriam imagine. It was just incredible. And Aaron Akayan, and that we'll see more of next week. But it's just amazing to imagine. And it will be Emir Tashem very, very, very soon. So we'll just stop over here, and as I'll just quickly again, this was, as we said, we learned many beautiful things today, but also as a in this chus of Le'ilu Nishmas, and I'll just see her name exactly. Don't want to say the wrong. Me and my papers. Rebetzin Malka Charna Bas Harav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi's Zecher Tzadik Levracha the Kaddish Levracha, and her neshama should have an Ali. As we said, her yartzeit is Gimel Elul. Okay. And a Rufua Shleima for Avram Moshe Ben Shendel, and of course Sheila, good year. Oh, really?
Don't we have relations with Dadla?
Don't we have relations with what?
We don't like those.
Oh, I know. Right, yes, we don't pick our relatives.
Huh? Lots of
I love it.
Yes, it's true. She had her three brothers. They were cousins.
Yes.
And they said to her, "You belong to those three cousins." They belong to the other side.
The other side. I've unmuted if anybody has any questions, but everybody should have a very good week.
They don't
try.
Okay. All
right.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Renee. I'll see you. Okay, I'll see you next week. All right. Oh, you're very, very welcome. You're very welcome. Only good things for the family. Lots of brachas. Brachas for the family. It's a shame. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Good. Hannah.
I find this an incredible translation. Right, because Moshe sent the missiles.
Yeah.
He sent Shluchim.
I know. Yes, the first one. There we go.
So, yeah, I find that an interesting thing that it's Veishlach Moshe Malachim.
I know, because Malachim mean many different things. But you're right.
Because you can't say he sent angels.
Angels, no. But you know what it means also? It means that when Moshe sends a shliach, he goes with the power of Moshe Rabbeinu.
He goes with the power of Moshe.
So he has the malachim with them. Yes. You know, we believe we all do. We all
because
have malachim with us.
Because you say about certain people and certain families, me, I don't want to say which ones, that they're malachim for this community. Like, they're like malachim, but that's... Yeah,
so it's but Hashem sends
like
malachim with
angels,
all of
angels because they're actually working on it down on
this world.
Like, but we you say, "Oh, it is a malach." Why is it a happy time? Because of your judgment, which you shouldn't judge, of the amazing things that person does or the personality.
Yes.
But so that's
yes, it's beautiful.
Okay,
house.
So
yeah.
it's translated
different ways, as we know, but it's so going
a
with
lot
Moshe's
of
yeah.
interpretations
right.
for that word.
Well, you can.
You
well,
can.
It's also because, as we do believe very much, I mean, Moshe especially, but any, as we say, we're all emissaries of Hashem in this world.
Yeah.
And Hashem gives us a malach to accompany us.
We're talking about malachim, it's because it's
with them. With them, 100%. For sure.
Thank you.
For sure. Echad, good. Good. Thank you. You too. Okay, bye everybody. I'm going to shut off the Zoom. Have a wonderful week. Only brachas, only good things. I don't know if some people don't know how to...
That's why we don't.
Thank you very much.